Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. Pharma Talk Radio is a non-profit program supported by the Conference Forum. I'm Valerie Bowling, producer of the show, and I'm so pleased to welcome our largest number of guests in a single show dedicated to the topic of making clinical trials a care option for patients. We first presented this topic at DPharm Europe, DPharm US, I apologize, this past September, to rave reviews and felt it was so important that we wanted to disseminate the information to a broader audience, and hence why we are all here today. So before we get started, I wanted to share a little bit about an op-ed piece back in June in the New York Times called Clinical Trials Need Cancer Patients. And so the writer is a patient and active participant in a clinical trial by the name of Stan Collender. And Stan goes on to say that only 3% of patients with cancer are in a clinical trial. And one of the patient problems that reduce participation rates is not making clinical trials a care option for patients. So we are going to learn in today's show how my guests on this program are indeed reversing this. So it is my pleasure to welcome our guest host, Catherine Vanderbilt, who is the Global Head of Clinical Innovation at Eli Lilly. And Catherine, who goes by Kathy, I welcome you, and I will let you take over and tell us about your journey in introducing our guests in helping make clinical trials a care option for patients.
Thank you very much, Val. I'm very excited to be here today, and I'm very excited to be talking to our distinguished guests about this topic. I believe that patients are the most important human involved in clinical research, and being able to make it a care option for patients all around the world is something that is very exciting and very important to me. And I believe that the guests that we have here today believe that's also very important. So let's get on and find out who they are, and let's meet them. So first of all, we have Jeff James, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Wilmington Health. So welcome, Jeff.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, everyone. As Kathy mentioned, I'm Jeff James, Chief Executive Officer for Wilmington Health. Wilmington Health is a private group practice made up of about 160 physicians in Wilmington, North Carolina, on the sunny coast. We are also an accountable care organization, which I'm certain we'll have more opportunity to explain what that actually means as the program goes on.
So welcome. I'm glad to have you with us this morning. The next guest we have is Jennifer Byrne. She's the Chief Executive Officer of PMG Research. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you, Kathy. Delighted to be invited into this conversation. Very, very passionate about this topic. PMG Research is an integrated network of sites really delivering a service solution on the healthcare side of the equation directly to patients. Over the past many years, we've had the privilege of facilitating clinical trial participation to over 100,000 patient volunteers over the span of thousands of clinical trials. So until fairly recently, we knew that the patient journey from an anecdotal standpoint was substantial, but we'll be very excited to be talking about some of the data that supports that amazing experience that patients do have when clinical trials is a care option.
Also, we have a colleague and friend from Lilly, Alan Beekler. Alan, welcome.
Thank you, Kathy. Hi, I'm Alan. I've been with the Lilly for quite some time, and I'm currently in the oncology area doing strategy and operations, and have spent maybe about the five to six years in clinical operations. And Lilly is on a journey to try and bring clinical innovations to clinical trials and the approach we take, and trying to make them more available to patients. And so that's our path that we're on right now.
Great. And one more guest. We also have Toyin Okolowin, who is actually with the Harvard Business School of Healthcare. And so welcome, Toyin, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Kathy. Greetings, everyone from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm certainly delighted to join this distinguished panel. My name is Toyin. I'm actually a physician by training and senior healthcare researcher for Professor Porter. he and our team have really focused on how to redefine healthcare delivery through what we call value-based healthcare delivery. And at this point, in terms of my role, I think, on this panel, is really I'm excited about exploring these options when improving clinical patient care through this trials. One of my other things that I'm really fond of is the fact that, you know, PMG and I, we've spoken over the last few months about how to really improve the patient care experience. I think value-based healthcare delivery framework fits right into that. So I'm delighted to join the call. Thank you.
Okay, well, great. So one thing we have in common that we've said the word often is that patients are seems to be at the core or at least top of mind or a center for many of us. And obviously it's the title of what we're here to talk about. One of the things you mentioned, Jeff, as you sort of talked about, you talked about the accountable care organization. And for many of the people that work in pharma and they work in clinical research, that is something that possibly isn't as familiar with folks. And I know that there's something like that is going on called meaningful use, and there's sort of stage one, stage two, stage three, and right now we're sort of looking at triple aim that's going on. Briefly, could you talk about, like, I know stage one is about data capture and data sharing. Could you briefly tell folks what that means to folks?
Well, okay, so meaningful use, we'll tackle that one first. Meaningful use means meaningful use of the electronic medical record. And the ability for electronic medical records to talk to each other and become more interoperable is something that is well overdue in the healthcare industry. And that's really what meaningful use means. And there are different stages, but what it's driving towards is being able to transfer a patient's medical history between organizations and have it accessible to do research on. Okay. The Accountable Care Organization is a term of art. It was developed in the Obamacare regulations. And what it really means is that we say that our organization is going to be accountable for three things. And those three things are the triple aim, which Kathy mentioned. So it says that we're going to be responsible for the health of the populations that we serve. We are going to be responsible for reducing the per capita cost of care, and we are going to be responsible for patient experience, improving the patient experience. And so those are the aspects of the triple aim and central to all accountable care organizations. That's about as brief as I can make that. Hope that works.
That is awesome. So how does clinical research then fit into being able to do that?
Well, if that's geared again towards me, there's a number of ways. And what we've seen within our accountable care organization is that those patients that are engaged in clinical research, we're actually able to achieve all three aspects of the triple aim. First of all, their experience, and hopefully Jennifer will speak to this later, but their experience is dramatically better than our traditional healthcare model. Second of all, we can demonstrate that their outcomes are improved, not only for the disease states that are under the research trial, but for other comorbid conditions. There seems to be a bit of a halo effect. And third, we can clearly demonstrate that the cost to the healthcare system is dramatically reduced because of their participation in the clinical trials.
Okay, so if that's the outcome that we can achieve, Jennifer, being somebody that works very closely with physicians, nurses, and pharmacists, one of the things that we find that makes it difficult for patients to participate in clinical research is that it's very difficult. It's either complex or it's very difficult for doctors, nurses, and pharmacists to engage in clinical research. And it's also a blocker for patients to participate in clinical research because their physicians either don't know about it or their physicians don't want to participate in it. And so we've heard Jeff talk about hey, there's this meaningful use to try and make it easy to exchange patient records to be available for healthcare providers to share this information. We've got this Obama legislation that's trying to make it easier for people to, you know, have improved experiences, reduce the cost, and to improve the population. And he's had some experiences to make this happen. But we know it's difficult for physicians and nurses to participate in clinical research. What do you know about that as being somebody that helps them do that?
Well, I think that it has to do with enlightenment about clinical trials. So with respect to healthcare systems, while today I think that most especially forward-looking, value-based healthcare systems are looking for better solutions for their patients. On the surface, the clinical trial journey looks very much, in some ways, like the practice of clinical medicine. However, because it's clinical research, it's very, very disruptive in terms of traditionally the normal flow of a medical practice, for example. Because at the end of the day, in clinical trials, we are collecting data in a highly regulated fashion that really at the heart of it is about ensuring the safety and protection of patients. So inherently there becomes some conflict because now we have clinicians who are passionate about patient care have the onus of responsibility of the regulations and the data collection. So I think that it's a disruptive process that has not been structured in a way to be complementary to the flow and the continuum of care of patients. And so clinicians tend to silo the clinical trial experience apart from their practice. What we're trying to do is to really, in a way, streamline that process so that clinicians can do what clinicians, I think, are passionate about, have dedicated their career, certainly their educational training, and that is to be engaged with patients and to better educate patients about the conditions for which they have, the concerns that they have, and together help make some of those care decisions, with patients. So I think inherently there is some conflict with that. We got very excited in addition to the framework that we've been talking about in terms of reduction of cost of care, improved outcomes, and the enhanced patient experience. We became very, very excited about the work of Professor Porter and his team when you look really at the value framework. And again, at the heart of it, of that work, we see that there is a huge opportunity if we change that paradigm and we look at clinical trials as a catalyst, in a way, to reorganize the infrastructure within the healthcare system that better promotes not only the external understanding of clinical trials, debunks maybe some of the myths that people see of being quote-unquote lab rats, as was referenced in the article that Valerie mentioned before, and really changing that paradigm to create these better pathways internally. So I'm excited for Toyin to share some of that work in terms of how we can even move beyond kind of this triple aim thinking to a broader base.
So Toyin, Jennifer would like to hear from you. What do you have to share?
Sure. I think it's important certainly for our listeners to kind of step back a little bit and understand what really value means. And certainly if you kind of look it up or what we have in our definition, it's really a recognized intrinsic benefit to the consumer for a service or good, in this case, of course, healthcare. But, our particular term is really about patient-derived outcomes over the cost of care, the full cycle of that care process. And, stepping back, a few years ago, the Bipartisan Policy Center, they came out, and the key is bipartisan, meaning on both sides of the aisles, they came out with a series of key drivers of why the U.S. healthcare system is broken. And one of those happens to be lack of transparency about cost and quality, compounded by the limited data to inform consumer choice. And so, as a physician myself, as well as working with other stakeholders who really want to just improve patient care, you know, having patients who really don't know what's going on in their care process is actually a detriment, not only to the patient, but also to the provider. So I feel that clinical trials in particular kind of addresses this in a way that's quite unique and hasn't yet been, I think, fully recognized. One, it restores what I think is the basic fundamental element between physicians and patients, and restoring that transactional relationship that's really a trusting relationship. One, you have buy-in from both parties, which I think is key and important. The second thing is, I think as patients learn a little bit more about what's going on, what types of other options are provided, not just ones on the market, but ones that are coming through the market, and they have that as an option earlier on, then they're able to better decide. But the third thing, which I think is important that ties this all together, is engagement. And what we find, I think, in terms of improving value for a patient is you can't really do that if they're not engaged or readily understanding the process. And so I think that's where it comes in. Now, our particular framework, I think, is more actionable in nature than perhaps, as Jeff James mentioned, with the triple aim. However, I think we are speaking basically the same language when it comes to having specific directives to improve patient care.
So when we talk about understanding the entire process, Alan, are you able to speak to what is required in clinical research for a patient to understand the entire process? Like, what does that mean?
Well, that's a very difficult thing for a patient, you know, because the process, as Jennifer referred to, is cumbersome currently, you know, and there's a regulatory requirements. And so to understand that, a patient really has to engage both with their physician and with the site and then understand the requirements of the particular trial that they maybe choose to participate in. So, you know, in today's environment, that's a challenge and one that which we need to continue to spend efforts on trying to innovate, streamline some of the activities that are required, whether it's using electronic consent forms and different opportunities that technology provides us today. But for a patient, there's a challenge to understand it. But on the flip side, the positive, that what Toyin is kind of reaching out to and speaking to is there's a higher level of engagement between a patient and a physician through a clinical trial or a site or a patient coach if you have it. So I think there's an opportunity there for us as a you know, a broader industry to really maybe change that paradigm a little bit. But certainly it's a difficult task for a patient and there's a challenge to it.
Okay, excellent. So what are the outcomes? I guess so. I know that you guys have done some research and you've sort of looked at what has been the effect of clinical trials and how has that data looked relative to patients that haven't participated in clinical research. So when you get to the value question, what does that sort of look like? And I know, Jeff, you've actually looked at patients in your healthcare system relative to patients that have participated in clinical trials and patients that haven't participated in clinical trials. I think it would be excellent for this audience to hear what has been the outcome of that analysis. What have we learned when we've actually looked at that? Are you able to speak to that, Jeff?
Yeah, I can. I can speak to that in a little bit more detail. So, first of all, in our in the patient experience arena, one of the things that we found is that we have years of patient satisfaction surveys. And so we've been able to go back, take a look at some of our old survey information, look at cohorts of patients, and compare them to the satisfaction levels for the same patients if they get into a clinical research trial. And so, for example, in one study, we looked at our diabetic patients, and we found that, in general, our diabetic patients are a little bit more satisfied than our average patient, and the ones that opt to get into clinical trials are a little bit more satisfied than our diabetic overall population before they got into clinical trials. Once they get into a clinical trial, then their levels of satisfaction go through the roof. And for an ACO, one of the biggest things, one of the biggest challenges is this issue of engagement. And one of the things that we've also tried to measure is the level of engagement. How engaged are the patients in their own healthcare? Because if they're engaged in their own healthcare, we believe that they'll have better outcomes. And clearly, once they're engaged in the clinical trial, their level of engagement goes up dramatically.
Excellent. So how does this translate into the pharmaceutical outcomes? So if we're seeing that increased engagement produces better outcomes for the patient, what does that mean for the pharmaceutical company? Does this help us with bringing new medicines to market? Does it help? What does that mean for us, Alan? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I'll take that one, yeah. There's a couple factors on that one from that question. It helps, one, of course, speed the product to the market. I think what's important to understand, though, is when you have a model like this where you have a physician network and electronic records and they're engaged with their patients and they see it as a care option and that engagement's occurring, you have an actively managed population of patients in which they're seeking opportunities to participate in clinical research where it fits their need. And for us, that drives enrollment, right? So then enrollment is, we are able to identify the right patients at the right time for the right trial, do it relatively quickly. It can allow us then to become more efficient on the operational side of running a clinical trial, which is very important, as well as maybe speed the product or the result of the study to conclusion and to the market. So it can really help on a couple factors. It's been really beneficial. I think in this model, looking at it, we've seen some real positive results. One last thing I'll say is, looking at some of the sites that Wilmington Health and their enrollment rates are really near the top of some of the other sites across North America when we compare them for particular trials. So it's very strong.
That sounds very easy. Sounds very straightforward. But we still have a huge enrollment problem in clinical research. So what is it that we're missing? Jennifer?
Well, I think we're still missing general education. So I'll share with you a story from a fairly recent conversation that I had with a seasoned clinical research investigator. So this is an individual who has participated in hundreds of clinical trials, would be recognized throughout the industry as a distinguished investigator, is somebody who, from my perspective, is doing clinical research for all the right reasons, very passionate about, bringing a good experience and helping, the health of their patients. But this particular physician, said to me when we were having a conversation on this very topic that from his perspective, the only patients that he approaches in his clinical practice are those patients for which he believes might have some type of economic need for participating. That would be their driver. They would be more likely to participate, for example, because there is a patient stipend associated with travel cost, and that would be meaningful to them, that it would offset the cost of, their prescription, whether it was a copay or, self-pay. And I see that the view everybody brings to the table biases in terms of why people participate in research. I think the opportunity for us is to step back and let patients use their own voice. And so in the words of Steve Collender in the article, which I thought were beautiful, and I can tell you we've heard it time and time again, and he says that, I am, in a way, he's saying, I am accountable for my own care as well. I want to be that I want to be in a partnership, in a trusted partnership, as Toyin has referenced, with my care provider. I'm a person who needs and wants a high level of care by experts. I want to be in control of my treatment. I decided that my last treatment or care was ineffective. I want to know what the other options are. I am a collaborator. I am a pioneer. And so I think first and foremost, we need to any and every opportunity to have that conversation, I think, to bring some of the data and the facts that really bear. And, you know, the data is that, you know, generally speaking, and this was data that came out of the Tufts Center a few years back, but in a widespread survey involving nearly 6,000 people, 72% of people surveyed actually said that they would consider participating in a clinical trial if they just knew about it. Unfortunately, I think that we have some physicians that carry maybe some of their own biases in terms of who may or may not participate, and we have health systems around them that have not built the infrastructure that really supports those activities.
Excellent. So now I have insider information, and Jeff, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. I know that you haven't always felt that clinical research was absolutely the way or a way in order to get work done at your particular facility or hospital. So what made you embrace clinical research and now be a supporter of it? Would you be willing to share a bit of that journey with everybody on the call, on the radio today?
Sure, sure. So I've been doing this for 20 years, and there's been an element of clinical research in every practice that I've been associated with. Until the last, 3 years or so, I've simply considered it an annoying hobby that some providers like to participate in. I saw it as not very economically sound for the organization and rather resource-intensive. And so it wasn't until really we started looking at it through the lens of the value proposition, the value equation, and the triple aim perspective of our ACO that I really started to modify my position on clinical research. And now I see it as an absolute tremendous countermeasure to all of the things that we're trying to do in the ACO. It produces a revenue stream, and it produces tremendous outcomes for the patients. So that's really where we're at. I would like to comment on something that Jennifer mentioned, and when we're talking about how come it's not more widely accepted, and a lot of that has to do not only with the patients and their own engagement in their healthcare, but also the physicians. Physicians typically don't really understand the role of research and feel like they are losing control of their patients if they send them to a research trial, because oftentimes the physician is not the investigator. And so educating the physicians and demonstrating the outcomes that we can now see, I think, is critical to gaining more and more acceptance of clinical research as a care option.
That's a good point. That's good to understand. So we heard earlier in the show that, you know, sometimes it can be disruptive, and Jennifer talked about the need to streamline the process. We've heard about the importance of hearing the patient voice. Now we're hearing about the possibility of the physician losing the control. So as we hear about what the benefits are, we can hear about what the blockers are that possibly prevent something that seems to be so powerful and so important that they still exist and we need to be mindful of them. So as we think about these patients having these voices and the benefits that can come out of this, increased outcomes, stronger relationships, taking more ownership of their health care, getting these, you know, bringing down the costs of health care, being able to hopefully getting a you know, less burdensome expenses in the healthcare system. What should patients get for participating in clinical research? These are still therapies that are experimental. They're, you know, getting care for that. This is something that, you know, not only they're contributing time and effort into this particular opportunity, but they're also contributing back to society. Do you guys have thoughts as to what patients should get for for taking on this particular journey with their patients, with their healthcare provider. Sorry, I misspoke. Does anyone have thoughts there? I'll let people jump in. If I don't hear anything in a moment, I'll call upon you.
Well, I'll be happy to speak to that. I think first and foremost, as trusted partners, patients deserve and need transparency. So certainly in keeping with the, experimental model, there is a need and a reason, very much a reason, for double-blind, placebo-controlled. But as soon as possible, and not to compromise the science, but, from day one, as soon as that is an opportunity, patients should and must know what they participated in. And what were they on active medication? Were they on a comparator? So we really believe very strongly that to overcome some of the trust barriers that we have with the public, we need to be bringing forth transparency. Absolutely.
And certainly, this is Toyin here, mirroring what Jennifer just said. I think, there's a sense that clinical trials may not have the the rigor that, these evidence-based guidelines, as physicians would like to say, tend to follow. And so I think not only is that a great point, but regardless of who the stakeholders are, I think there needs to be that sense of accountability. I mean, I always somewhat laugh and chuckle when I hear, these accountability care organizations, and that's the only organization that should be held accountable. No, I think every person who's involved in the patient care process has to be held accountable. I think clinical trials gives the opportunity where that transparency of information is that endpoint, but also creates that level of accountability that's also so important.
Excellent. Toyin, can you restate that statement around rigor? A lot of people in the pharmaceutical industry feel that being involved in clinical research is extremely rigorous and policy and regulation-driven industries. So could you restate that rigor and how the healthcare system may see things as being more rigorous than clinical research? That might be helpful for the audience.
Sure. No, thank you for giving the opportunity to clarify. I think, there's this kind of misnomer, and more importantly, I think there's this, honestly, misguided information. I think we all mentioned how sometimes physicians bring their own biases to, provide clinical trials not as an option, but sometimes as a last resort. In other words, they've gone through all the kind of, the New England journals and all these, types of modalities to try to figure out what they could do for their patient. And then if there's nothing else, then like, oh, well, I heard about this clinical trial 2 years ago. And so it becomes, the perception that I think of a clinical trial may be, well, it's just, folks who get together, they're doing this, but is it really helping? And so I think, at the end of the day, that's where bringing people to the table to really understand this is really the science behind the clinical trials. This is what's proven. This is what we're doing. And more importantly, this is how it could help your particular patient cohort. And once I think physicians understand that, then they also could bring that to the table when it's time to meet the patient and say, by the way, have you heard there is a clinical trial in your area? Here's an investigator. Certainly please contact this person and see how we could help you as a team. So I think that's where I'm coming in from that end. But I would say that I think, in particularly in medicine, we tend to always go straight to the journals and we go straight to kind of the lab to bedside as opposed to anything else. And so I think it's more of education, if anything.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thanks for elaborating on that. I think also, too, that when we talk about it being a healthcare option, I think sometimes people do actually hear that a little bit differently as well, is that there are very, very different clinical trials, and I think it's worthwhile for us to dig a little bit what we mean about a healthcare option. Some people are hearing it as a treatment. Some people are hearing it as different words. And so I think it probably is important that we probably talk a little bit about what we mean as a healthcare option. And so I'll just give us a chance to talk through that a little bit. So I'll start with you, Jennifer, and then I'll call upon you, Alan, maybe to elaborate on it a little bit. So, Jennifer, do you want to help the audience? What do we mean by it being a healthcare option?
Well, Kathy, I think we have to be a little more mindful in our conversations and how we frame. We have these generalized terms that I think perpetuate confusion in some ways. So when we talk about the human clinical trial experience, for example, the way I see it, phase one clinical trials where we truly are looking at healthy populations and we're just looking at a safety profile, I wouldn't include that in this discussion. I think as we move through clinical trials where we're actually bringing the patient populations for which we anticipate might have some benefit, I think that's where this discussion is really focused on. I think we also have to separate when we are looking at the types of trials. So in the case of rare disease and in oncology clinical trials, it might well be that clinical trials is a treatment option. But I think we have to look at what are the other options available to a patient. You know, outside of rare disease and cancer, I think we have to be very, very careful because, you know, to the topic of trust and transparency, we can't make that claim that clinical trials is a great treatment option for all. I think that what pharma in particular should expect with the respect to the dollars that they are funding for this work, I think that they should expect that the providers, their service providers, are being good stewards of those resources and the experience and ensuring that at very minimum that the patient receive really an exceptional experience. And I like to describe it as a white glove experience. So that patients in clinical trials, they are special, and they are receiving special care. So I think it's important to really kind of frame that and make that very, very clear distinction. And if you look at it that way, the facts would support that, in fact, people in clinical trials, they get more touch points with the physician and the care team. The experience that they have with research coordinators or study nurses is really expanded beyond that. I mean, these are individuals that are really acting as health coaches. And health coach is a very important component to that to ensure that patients understand what they're committing to through the consent process, that they are fully committed to comply with the research plan, and understand probably or quite possibly in a very different way the impact and the importance of compliance. Just quite simply, what it means to be taking your medication exactly when you're supposed to, under the very conditions that you're supposed to. So I think that those are some really, really important components. And I think if we focus on that patient experience and ensuring that for whatever reason a patient came into a clinical trial, whether it was motivated by frustration in terms of lack of desirable outcomes from other treatment pathways that they've had, whether it is financially driven, whether it's just an internal calling that they feel like that they need to give back and be part of some bigger picture, all of those things that might well be bringing somebody to a clinical trial, I think that if we all, you know, throughout the entire ecosystem supporting that patient, if we have as a goal that they walk away having actually fulfilled really all of those buckets of motivation, I think that's where we will really start to see that we move the needle. In the case of oncology trials, it's about 3% of the U.S. population. Abroad, it's actually more. If you look in the U.K., I believe oncology trial participation is about 30%. But in the U.S., across the board, if you take out oncology, it's really less than 1% of the population. You know, what does this look like if we move the needle, you know, not to huge numbers, But what does that look like if it's 2%? And those are really meaningful numbers.
Excellent. Is there anything, Alan, you'd like to add?
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, as a trial sponsor, I think, you know, we think of clinical trials and clinical research as a care option in that there's a lot of innovative science going on in the industry right now, and I think that it brings some real potential solutions for patients. And it comes back to some of the earlier conversation about, you know, we believe it's a care option based upon the conversation between that patient and his physician or her physician, and whether it's identified as an appropriate treatment option for them going forward. And, you know, if you bring that forward to them and to that patient, and if you combine that with the comments that Jennifer is speaking about, the high touch and the engagement, you know, I think that becomes a valuable option for a group of patients. And it allows us to advance science and allows us to bring things to the market, but it also, you know, provides an opportunity for patients to maybe get solutions that they would not otherwise have. So, you know, that's why we would consider a care option and like to try and continue to make it available to anyone who where it is appropriate.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As you can see, that this is quite an exciting topic, and that you can see that by bringing a healthcare system like Wilmington Health, a research organization like PMG, and a pharma company like Lilly together to create this integrated network to really have this shared vision to do make clinical research a care option. In this particular situation has shown great success by improving patients' experience, increasing their experience. That increased experience and increased engagement has increased their outcomes. And we heard people talk about that. And now getting Harvard Business School health team to start working with this team and actually determine what does that mean to the healthcare agenda is actually very exciting. So we could probably talk for another 45 minutes or another hour. As you can see, there's so much to talk about on this particular topic with Jeff, Jennifer, Alan, and Toyin. But recognizing that we're coming close to the end of the time that we have, hopefully everyone listening to this is still very engaged and hopefully has more and more thoughts and ideas about this particular topic, and hopefully maybe reach out to some of these people to learn more. I just wanted to kind of summarize and hopefully capture some of the key points that many of you have shared, is that, and this is many of the points that you got, hopefully I've captured them well for you guys, is that this trusting relationship between the healthcare provider, the physician, and the patient is very, very important and something that you're all very interested in. And what we're seeing is that clinical research is showing that that is alive and well, and we're all looking to improve that. And what it does is it provides, as Toyin talked about, a buy-in from both parties. And therefore, there's a complete understanding of all the options that are on the table, both that are readily available in the market, readily available to the patients, as well as this research opportunity. And that because both have bought in to do it, then there's complete understanding and an increased engagement to participate in this particular activity together. There's also an effort on all parties to streamline the process so that the physician and the nurses and the healthcare providers can do what they do best in this process. And make it easy for them to participate in it, because what we're asking them to do is research, and that is different than day-to-day standard of care, and we're actively trying to work to make that easier and better. We're not there yet, but we're trying to do that, and companies like PMG are definitely on the forefront to try and make that happen. We find that when patients do take an active interest in their disease, their condition, their health care, that increased engagement produced increased outcomes, and that decreased costs. And then understanding how clinical research can help you do that helps leaders like Jeff of large healthcare organizations bring down costs. And obviously there's a continual need to educate people, whether it's the patients and allowing them to take responsibility for the health care, whether it's healthcare communities so that physicians understand what this means, leaders understand what this means, then we can work together in order to help improve the lives of our patients, lives of our communities, and to be able to bring the overall health of our communities to a better place. So that's what we've heard, and clinical research can help be part of that. Pharmas can be help be part of that. And for many of us, that's why we've gotten to the healthcare business to begin with, is to help improve the lives of people. So hopefully you've heard a little bit about that in this show. And thank you, Jeff, Jennifer, Alan, and Toyin, for being with us this morning. It's been great having you here, and I wish you a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Kathy, for being our guest host today. And for more information on this topic and other topics in clinical trials, please visit www.theconferenceforum.org. Thanks, everyone, again.